Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgebeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello. With the global conversation so firmly focused these past few months on anxiety, fear, anger, blame, resentment, and separation, I'm sure that many of us are ready for a different kind of story. A narrative that focuses on love, creativity, healing, triumph over seemingly insurmountable odds, and success beyond imagining. Well, tonight we're going to hear about an extraordinary love story that began with a forbidden relationship and led to the creation of a world-famous winery and Napa Valley's most coveted wine. It's a tale of alchemy, passion, synchronicity, and creativity, of making dreams happen, of unbelievable success and devastating grief and loss, as well as an abiding love and an ongoing heart-to-heart, soul-to-soul, and body-to-body communication that transcended even death. Bonnie Meyer is the principal of the Meyer Family Enterprises, an ethical impact investment company dedicated to the regeneration of the planet. She's also the author of Perfectly Paired, The Love Affair Behind Silver Oak Cellars. Bonnie Meyer joins me now to share her extraordinary story, as well as her experiences and her insights about what really matters in life, in love, and in relationships, about seeing the best in one another, and how to live a full life with purpose, even after everything that created your normal has gone. Bonnie Meyer, welcome.
Thank you very much, Sandy.
Bonnie, you were just 18, still in college, when you met the love of your life, Justin Meyer, on his 29th birthday. He was a celibate Franciscan monk and an accidental winemaker working with the Franciscan Christian Brothers, which owned one of the only Napa Valley wineries people could name at that time. Tell us a little bit about those early days, who Justin was, how your friendship grew into love, and the terrible decision that he had to make as a man committed to celibacy and to his work and to his order, to leave his wife and begin anew with you.
It's a remarkable story, and the one that people have encouraged me to write for a long time. And so the essence of that story is I was invited to a professor's house the first month of my time at the university, and I was so excited to have a home-cooked meal after even just 1 month of eating dorm food. And my new friend that invited me said, "This is a birthday party for Brother Justin. He plays the banjo, so bring your guitar." I did. I walked into the house. I stashed my guitar kind of behind where I knew I would be sitting, where he couldn't see it. And we had a wonderful, warm and wonderful dinner together. Brother Justin, I expected him to be, I was educated by nuns, I expected to see him all in black, in a black robe. But he wasn't. He was in normal street clothes and very friendly and approachable. So right away, I liked him. When dinner concluded, I took my guitar out of its case and led everyone in singing Happy Birthday. His eyes just lit up, and he went to his room. He was actually living with this professor, and went to his room, got his homemade banjo, and brought it back to the dining table, and we started playing music right there. Then retired to the family room where we played songs for another 2 or 3 hours. We had the most marvelous time. So it was a friendship and a bond through music that occurred right away. Now, Justin again was he was not a Franciscan. He was a Christian brother, and the Christian brothers are dedicated to teaching. And the Christian brothers many years ago had started a winery in California to make money to support the schools and the students that they were teaching. So he showed a lot of leadership as a young man. He had gone to a Christian Brothers high school, decided to join the brothers, and wanted to coach and teach. But his superiors saw leadership within him and designated that this is going to be the man that's going to lead Christian Brothers for the next 40 years. So he was there at the university to gain more technical knowledge of winemaking and grape growing. Our friendship continued through that school year, as he began to play music with me at church and to actually help me with my Spanish classes. And one night, after we had known each other and spent time together for a number of months, he was taking me home. He stopped the car. We got out and kissed me and told me he was in love with me. And I was really kind of dumbfounded. But then in those, one of those pregnant moments where your past experiences kind of go through your mind, and I realized in that moment that I was in love with him too, and I told him so. And so we stood there in the moonlight, not quite knowing what to do next, except that to just honor that, and we would figure it out. But we both knew that whatever it was, it wasn't going to continue into romantic relationship.
How long a time passed before you got to the point, well, he got to the point, because you never pressed him, where he said, I have to be with you and I have to leave the Christian Brothers?
It was 5 years of coming together and then deciding we can't see each other anymore. It was 5 years of agony and ecstasy, really. And I was so determined never to encourage him to leave the brothers. I dated other men and really tried very hard to fall in love with someone else. And it was really at the very end of my time there at the university where I had a conversation with him, one of many that just says, we can't do this anymore. But this one was really final in my mind. I was leaving. I was going to enter a career and had to really live my life and make other choices. It was over. And it was about a week or two after that that I was at the Omos, at the professor's house, working on some teaching tools when he showed up and asked me, told me that he was going to decide to leave the brothers. He had really thought about it over the years that we knew each other. He had decided that he was going to leave. He felt it was so hard for him because he was felt like he was letting down his organization. But he needed to leave, and he asked me to marry him, and I said yes.
Yes. So in leaving the Christian Brothers, he also left the winery. He had to leave the winery. And so you embarked on married life, really not knowing what you were going to do, you know, to earn your living, etc. I mean, he had this wonderful training. And he had a bit of a reputation too, didn't he, as a really promising winemaker. So tell us what happened next and how you came to found, you know, Silver Oaks.
Well, I often tell people that when Justin and I got married, the sum total of our assets was he had a dog and I had a car. And that's pretty much, you know, yeah, I'd been a student, he'd been a monk, you don't have a whole lot there. But we did have good education, and he had some great experience. During the few months between his decision and our wedding, he was approached by a Denver oil man, Ray Duncan, who had bought a lot of property and wanted somebody to farm it for him. And so Ray approached Justin and said, would you please farm my property? And at first Justin said, no, what I really want to do is I like consulting what I'm doing now, and what I really want to do is I want to start a winery. And Ray Duncan said, well, do you know how to make wine? and former brother Justin said, yes, I do. And in fact, he had been trained with one of the only famous winemakers in the country at that time, Brother Timothy. So as it turns out, Justin and I were married, and we started Silver Oak in the same week.
Now, that was at the time when, you know, Napa Valley was a kind of sleepy little country place, and they were making generic wines. They weren't really on the map, in a sense. But between you and a few other fellow vintners in the valley, you and Justin took an industry and turned it into something quite remarkable. If anyone's familiar with the movie Bottle Shock, it does kind of tell the story of how Napa Valley was put on the map when it confounded the French, who were very arrogant about their own position in the winemaking business. And it mm-hmm. won a number of awards with Stag's Leap and Chateau Montelena. And that was the beginning of Napa Valley's rise to glory, wasn't it?
It really was. In the early 70s, which is 72 when we started Silver Oak, most wineries made at least 12 different wines. And most of that was fairly generic and in gallon jugs, frankly. But it was folks in the late 60s, early 70s that really came to the Napa Valley or shifted what they wanted to do and decided to make vintage dated varietal wines. But there was one thing that was so important, and actually it's really important today. People are realizing how important this is in today's climate with our economies shifting and the COVID, everything that we need to do around that. And that is the power of collaboration and cooperation. Everyone that came to the valley in the 70s, 80s, and into the 90s, if a new guy showed up on the block or in the vineyard, the neighbors would go over and say, hey, let me know if you'd like to borrow a tractor, or I can loan you my filter. I can do some analysis for you. There was such a collaborative, welcoming culture here. And the underlying belief was, if we all work together, we can make it together. We can make sure that every bottle of wine that comes out of the Napa Valley is at least technically sound, if not very good. And it's that collaboration that put Napa Valley on the map. None of us did it. We did it together. Yeah, we absolutely did it together.
And, you know, your book, Perfectly Paired, I mean, it really takes the reader on a journey, you know, that tracks the evolution of Silver Oak Cellars from its original 500-acre dairy farm and winemaking in a milk barn to a world-class vineyard and state-of-the-art winemaking facilities. You know, Silver Oak Cabernet is an iconic wine. What makes it so special?
Well, I believe that it's special because at least at the beginning, when Justin and I were very involved in it, that our relationship and our dedication to really sound values, not values written up on a on a plaque somewhere in our workplace, but we really lived our values. He had been, a monk. I had gone to a Catholic high school, considered being a nun. So we really shared these strong values of respect and generosity with all of our customers and our suppliers, integrity. I believe that our love for each other combined with those values, the values-based business, really created the extraordinary success that we achieved at Silver Oak. I think it's flavored with love, right?
I was just going to say that. The love you had for one another spilled over into everything that you did. Now, how many years was it? 30 years? You raised a family, 3 children. You created an incredibly successful winery. You did all sorts of things that hadn't been done before. And eventually you sold the Silver Oak, and you and Justin were going to do something else, and then tragedy struck. Tell us about that.
It was just close to 30 years that Justin and I were married. I would say people did say that we had an extraordinary relationship. And we were friends, we were lovers, we were business partners, and parents together. We shared all of it. And one day after a picnic up in the mountains, Justin had a heart attack and died within the space of, 10 minutes. He was there and laughing, literally, and then he was gone. And that was it's so hard to lose a loved one, and even harder to lose them without warning, or with, you know, what sudden death of any kind.
Mm, yeah. Now, you actually start the book, you open the book with the story of Justin's sudden passing. Why did you choose? And the book, you know, tracks back and forward in time, and it does it, you know, very fluidly. But why did you choose to open the book with that really emotive story?
I did that because there are moments in our lives that change everything, where everything shifts. And, and it can be different things. It can be the first moment that we go to a new city and we realize something, or the first moment we meet someone. And in this case, the moment that Justin died, it felt like my universe shifted on its axis. You know, everything was different. So that's why I started. It's like that's where I needed to go forward from. And the book does track, actually, my grief journey, which is pertinent for today as people are losing losing their health, losing their jobs, and losing loved ones. That grief journey is so common to all of us. And it impacts us all in terrible ways, but also can be the beginning of a new life and a new way forward.
The book is rich with stories, covering all of those years and many different facets of a relationship and a business as well. And, incredibly readable book. And it's also courageously candid. There's a part in it that I want to talk about, which was Justin's memorial. And you write that knowing that Judaism has a deep tradition around death and grieving, you wanted to do something different, and you borrowed a beautiful Jewish tradition that struck a profound chord within you. Would you share that with us, and how specifically you felt you could embody that tradition?
So I did. I called, I grew up Catholic. The Catholics actually don't have as rich a tradition, in my mind, as Judaism. So I called a friend who was Jewish, and I asked her, what do people do? And she, one of the things that she told me was that the sons of a man who has died, they carefully choose what they feel are the most important characteristics that that person has. And they carry those characteristics forward in their life. And it's a way to keep that person's, and honor that person for the rest of their life. And so that really struck a chord with me. So I decided to do that. And in fact, I even walked up to the podium. About 2,000 people came to Justin's memorial over at Silver Oak. And I walked up to the podium, and I wanted to share this with everyone. And my words were, let us go forth honoring him by being more genuine and generous, living boldly with personal integrity, unpretentious self-confidence, and joyful humor. And that is what I've dedicated myself to doing. And it has led to bolder and surprising and enriching experiences in my life going forward.
And there must have been times when it was incredibly challenging, with the weight of the grief, with your loss. You had your own health issues to worry about around that time, to maintain those ideals. You know, how hard was it?
Well, there were certainly right after Justin died, despite the signs that he initiated to let me know that he was around, and we can talk about that in a bit. But despite that, despite my experiencing his presence at different times, I really wanted to die, because I wanted to go, which means I wanted to go and be where he was. I wanted to shift dimensions and be with him. My longing for him to be with him was so deep. And there were, so that was a real dark period. And one of the, I would say maybe the primary thing that really helped me was a connection with a good friend who told me, call me anytime. She happened to be a professional grief counselor, but she was a friend from high school who I was close to. And she just said, call me anytime. And I did, 2 a.m, 4 a.m, whenever it was that I was just felt lost. She was my lifeline. And I also took me a long time to really dive down and embrace grief, which is not what I recommend. I recommend that to the best of your ability, we get on with it, because there are gifts down there in that deep well. But it took it. I really struggled.
We're going to come back to that after the break. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with Bonnie Meyer, co-founder with her late husband, legendary winemaker Justin Meyer, of the internationally renowned Silver Oak Cellars. And we're talking about her newly published memoir, Perfectly Paired, The Love Affair Behind the Famous and Much Loved Silver Oak Cellars. We'll be back with more from Bonnie Meyer after this break.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OmTime's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? As a long-time editor, book judge, spiritual magazine publisher and radio host, I've read thousands of books and interviewed hundreds of authors and teachers, so I know what's worth reading and what isn't. Now, with the spiritual book market growing increasingly crowded, more and more people are seeking my help in finding the authentic voices, the empowering tools, and the genuine skip the BS guidance that will make the most difference to their spiritual development. So I decided to make it easier by bringing my knowledge, experience, and considerable network of contacts together in the No BS Spiritual Book Club. There are no ads, no joining fees, no obligations, and no BS. Just an ever-growing library compiled by recognizable and respected names of the 10 best books that help them the most on their journeys. Plus, free book excerpts, audios, and live video interviews where you can quiz them about their spiritual journeys and their 10 best list choices. Your time and money are valuable, your spiritual journey even more so. If you're looking for genuine guidance from people who've walked this path before you, check out sedgbeer.com. Click on the No BS Spiritual Book Club tab and join the club. That's sedgbeer.com, sedgbeer.com. I'll see you there.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your health care provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Bonnie Meyer, I'd like to talk about those dark days after you lost Justin, when you dived into that grief, as you mentioned earlier, which, you know, you write about so eloquently in your book. And you also write about the growth experiences, how you thought about suicide on several occasions, how you learned not to become afraid of death. And you say that grief is alchemical. What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is that, you know, in alchemy is you take something ordinary, which I'm very familiar with in the wine business. Grapes are somewhat ordinary. They grow all over the world. And you, through cultivation and through fermentation, they are transformed into something extraordinary. And in fact, wine, I didn't know this till not so long ago, wine is actually a symbol of alchemy worldwide. So we can do that with ourselves too. We can take our loss and our grief and our dark emotions, and through really the meditation, through feeling them and diving down, literally diving down into and feeling all those feelings, it allows them to ferment, those feelings to ferment, that experience to ferment, and allow ourselves, we surrender to these things and allow ourselves to be transformed. And I'm not sure what else to say about that, except that in the end, I learned that grief really does hold great gifts. And for most of us, it breaks our heart open in a way that nothing else can.
You also write about the experiences you had when Justin came back to visit you after his death. Tell us a little bit about that.
The first was the evening, not the evening of his death, but the evening thereafter, the second night. My daughter had arrived. She had been in Boston, and she had flown across country. She arrived, and I was kind of tucking her into bed where Justin usually slept. She was in my bed, in our bed, and I was sitting on the side of the bed like you do with a friend or a child, and we were quietly talking. And all of a sudden, a pebble flew from about 10 feet away across the room and landed at my feet. And Holly and I looked down at the pebble, and we looked at each other, and we looked down at the pebble again, and we looked at each other, and very quietly she just said, "Hi, Daddy." And it brings tears to my eyes every time I talk about that. It was such a profound experience for the both of us. And it was a comforting experience. And in that moment, of course, in that moment, we were in love, not in grief. Mm. We were in relief and connection with him. What happened next, the next day, is more on the hilarious side. There was one of these wall-mounted hair dryers that you find in hotels sometimes on the wall in our bathroom. And he used to hit the hair dryer with his elbow by mistake. He had very close cropped hair. He did not need this hair dryer. but when he was shaving or whatever, he would leave, he would hit it, and it would disengage and start going off. And he just hated that thing. Well, that next day, the hair dryer broke. The motor just started going off, and so I unhooked it and then hooked it back on, and nothing made any difference. It just, the motor went on. And then I just started to walk away, and the motor went off, and I go, "Huh, that's interesting." And within a day or two, my friend Mary Kay said, "You know, I'm noticing that every time you're really upset, the hair dryer goes crazy. And every time you calm down and are more at peace, the hair dryer slows down and stops." Well, that went on for at least a year. That it was Justin's way of saying, "I'm here. You're okay. Everything's going to be okay."
And you had other more in-depth personal experiences when you were doing some holographic breath work when you were at the Monroe Institute, where you literally, you know, met with Justin.
I did. It started with having a few lucid dreams, which I found very, very comforting and amazing. It's like I was just walking down the street with him, and we were talking about the kids. They felt very ordinary, but very vivid, different than a normal dream. And I wanted so badly to have these dreams at will, but did not know how. And then I was introduced to both the Monroe Institute and then later holotropic breathwork. And I learned through these meditation techniques that I could actually meet Justin face-to-face. Someone asked me, "Well, what was it like? You know, what kind of things were you talking about then?" And in those experiences, it actually is much more of a almost kind of a sacred blending where we're just there together. It's so it's there's no words are needed. No words are needed.
You say those times were very comforting, but they also must have left you feeling even more bereft afterwards. How did you cope with that?
Yeah, they did. They were when I would have one of these very intense experiences with him, and then it would be over, and I would just start crying, and not wanting him to go, and of course, and so it was, again, it was kind of like those early years of our relationship where we wanted to be together, but we couldn't. So it was jubilation and despair.
Yes.
But over time they evened out. Again, that has, those things kind of have a resolution of their own accord when we just allow them to resolve, and those experiences evened out, and I feel his presence actually pretty keenly whenever I think about it. I can literally feel him hugging me from behind. He was this bear kind of guy,
You talked about, you know, wanting to die several times. At what point, and what was the catalyst for you deciding that you were going to move forward, you would survive this grief, you would endure the pain, and you would resurrect yourself and launch a new way of living, a new career?
The first impetus came very early. When Justin died, I had just been in the hospital and having just had a very serious life-threatening surgery for cancer just a few months before. And so my kids, having just lost their dad, were looking at me like, you can't die. They really had fear in their eyes. And it was that encouraged me to just keep going and doing everything I needed to do to not only recover from the aftermath of the cancer, but to keep moving forward step by step in my life. Over time, my kids were in their 20s when their dad died, and now my youngest is almost 40. And so as they kind of moved into their own life, my purpose for living, Justin had become my purpose for living. And then my kids became my purpose for living. And then over time, my purpose for living became actually caring for the planet in the ways that made sense to me. So farming more regeneratively and investing in projects and companies that make that improve society and improve the planet and the course of their business. So that is what gets me up in the morning now.
Yeah. So you said it took you a long time to write this book. And lots of people had asked you, what was the actual catalyst? Why now?
People had been asking me, they wanted to know that forbidden love story between a monk and a mm-hmm. college poet. And I thought, well, I don't want to tell that story. I don't need to tell that story. But then all of this, at one point, I realized that, and it was through some conversations with some friends of mine that happened within a week and a half, where these men said, I don't think I've ever been in love. I've been married and divorced, but I don't think I've ever been in love. I think I'm broken. And every cell of my body said, no, you're not broken. We all have that capacity. And in fact, this is our birthright to have all the same kind of extraordinary relationship that I had. So I decided that I could write stories. This is not a how-to book. It is a love story. But I could write the stories of my relationship with Justin, how it wove through the winery, and my struggles and resurrection. I could write these stories in a way that everyone else could find themselves in there, because my story is your story. All of our stories, the human story, doesn't change much at the end of the day. And so it was that desire to really to knowing that I could I could tell my story in a way that and use that story of our forbidden relationship to possibly be helpful and help people find themselves in there.
Yeah, well, you say, you know, it's not a how-to book, but in a sense it is, because in reading what you have to say about your relationship, you know, he wasn't a perfect man. He was a man. And, you know, he had his foibles and his idiosyncrasies, as we all do. And how you chose to work and collaborate together, how you chose to move through those times that maybe would tear other people apart. So, you know, it is a how-to, because we can observe, we can read between the lines, and we can take, you know, some of those things on board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, many people who have read the book have said that it inspired them to think more deeply about their relationships and about their life, and it gives them hope that also that the loss of a loved one is in form only, and that our connection and relationships endure beyond time and space.
Mm. You say that great relationships can create and grow a beautiful business and a beautiful life. What tips would you offer couples? What do you think is the most important thing in creating a great relationship?
Somebody asked me the other day, or actually said, you and Justin must have worked really hard on your relationship. And actually, we didn't work hard at all. We actually didn't work on a relationship. What we did is we worked on ourselves. And one of the things that I used to tell Justin and Jess, that I never would have married him if he hadn't have been a monk for 15 years beforehand. I think those 15 those 15 years of meditation and contemplation really softened him. He was born into a family where both of his parents were raging alcoholics. And he was a pretty tough kid. You could see it from just the photographs of him when he was young. And it really softened him. And then together in our relationship, I think relationship, I do know that some spiritual people go off and they go into a cave and they're alone for years as a way to really hone their spiritual practice. And personally, I think a relationship does that for you. It is the crucible of transformation. Again, it's an alchemical process when we can be together with someone and have miniature ego deaths every day. Through working on ourselves and being humble and being very authentic and forthcoming with each other, that made our relationship extraordinary.
And you're not just talking about a love relationship, a partnership. I mean, isn't that true of all relationships?
Absolutely. Yes, it is true of all relationships. Yeah.
I mean, you write about the relationships that you had with your employees, your family, as you were building Silver Oak. And today, what we see is, especially when businesses become established and they become successful, is that, you know, the machine takes over. It stops being so much a family, and it's driven by the need for profits, etc. But you held, you know, for 30 years, you held to those beliefs that you and Justin had about, you know, treating people, you know, fairly and equally, and everybody being part of your family.
Well, we did, and I believe that had a lot to do with our success. The fact that we were generous with everyone. You know, early on when we started working together, Justin and I looked at each other at the end of the day, and we said, you know, we're spending most of our time at work. I think that we ought to have as much fun as possible, since this is where we're spending our life. And when we made that decision It encourages everyone around us to have fun. This is where we live. We need to bring our life, our love, our joy to work with us every day. Otherwise, what are we doing?
For sure.
And it leads to great place. You know, really, it does lead to a success that is not a contrived success, right? It's not a driven success. It's a more natural and type of success.
Well, this is the missing piece, isn't it, that people forget about. It's that je ne sais quoi, that unseen energy that one creates in that crucible of, you know, love and companionship and collaboration and cooperation and care for one another, that impacts everything, every single mm-hmm. part of that business. And people forget about that sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Our business became so attractive that we attracted the best people. Every people wanted to work for us, and no one ever left. And business people often forget the cost of turnover. And we also attracted customers who just loved our Cabernets and that were laced with love. And they would send us stories, and so it became really a big family. Again, not because we intended it. Our employees are the ones who said, you know, we feel like a family. And that's just, that's the best thing about working here. Yeah.
Yeah. Perfectly Paired, for me, is, you know, more than just a memoir. I mean, it is a roller coaster. It is a very extraordinary story. You know, it's a spellbinding memoir. It's a relationship guide. It's a grief counselling book. And also, you know, a wonderful first-hand account of wine history in the making. So it has all of these things going for it. I'd like to know, how is it being received by people who, you know, people who bought your wines, people who knew you and Justin as these incredible winemakers and business people? What's the reaction to it?
One of the reactions is, wow, I learned a lot about you. I didn't realize the struggles that you had been through. I didn't know the intimate backstory. But then again, at the end, what really makes me happy is when they say it made me think more deeply about life and my relationships, and I'm going to shift what I'm going to do, and which is why I wrote it.
Well, today, I mean, you devote your attention to addressing world environmental, social, and economic challenges by financially supporting social ventures. You've been acknowledged as a pioneer of impact and regenerative investing by Forbes magazine and others in the financial industry. You know, this resurrection, you know, this new part of your life, in, as you said, you know, you've been a mother, you've been a wife, you've been a business person. Now you're almost being a little bit of a mother to the planet. What does that do for you? How does that make you feel? How does it fill the holes left behind?
I started impact investing because I was, after a couple of years of help from some professionals, I realized I had a very boring, very balanced, very boring portfolio. And I realized that I enjoyed my philanthropy work better than I did my investing work. So it started out as being a way to have more fun. And at the end of the day, the social entrepreneurs that I invest in are amazing and wonderful. They're the kind of people that you want to spend your day with. So it's very fulfilling, and I don't do it because I want to be a good person. I do it because it's more fun and more fulfilling for me.
Yeah. I'm sure. You tell some wonderful stories throughout the book. Is there any particular story about the evolution of Silver Oak that stands out in your mind or you most like to share with people?
I would say one of the more extraordinary things about Silver Oak, well, two things. Justin had made many wines at at Christian Brothers, and he was came out of that experience really wanting to just make one and focus on one. So our mission then became my mission as a marketer became to make Silver Oak Sonanas Cabernet Sauvignon. Beyond that, after a while, people figured out retailers would run out of wine before the next wine was released, and people began to spontaneously figure out when we were going to release our next wine. And some people started. One day we went to the winery on a Saturday, and there was a line of people out the, you know, in front of the door. And we show up and we go, "What's going on?" And they go, "Ah, we're here for the release to get our wine before it's gone." And go, "Oh, okay." And so Justin went into the winery and took them inside, and I went and got coffee and donuts because it was really early in the morning. And then the next time we released our wine, there was an even longer line. And then the next time, some people started sleeping in line, so we started hiring somebody to stay there and give people numbers so that they could go somewhere. And this release day became a really large event through really just responding to what people wanted. And I think I'd like to make that point, that a lot of it, of life and success, is really responding to what's happening and embracing it. And, you know, the coffee and donuts turned to ice cream and roast beef, you know, and cheese and wonderful things. So just being there with people and with that generosity. Yeah.
That's beautiful. We're almost out of time now, Bonnie. A couple of things that I want to say. I know that you are inviting people to send their stories about a body experiences and communication beyond death to you, because you feel that, you know, these need to be talked about a lot more than they are. So we'll give out, you know, details of your website in a minute. But as we close, if there was one piece of wisdom, one piece of advice that you could offer people for living a full life with purpose, what would it be?
Well, in one word, it would be vulnerability. That's really the key to spiritual growth. It's also the key to growth within a relationship.
Yeah. Absolutely, I agree with you. As we close, Bonnie, would you like to share with our listeners where they can get a copy of Perfectly Paired?
Yes, you can get a copy on my website, bonniemeyer.com. That's BONNYMEYER.com. You can get a copy there. Also, Justin's book, Plain Talk About Fine Wine, is there as well. In the notes section, if you let me know that you were listening to this radio show, I don't know how to give you a discount. I haven't figured it out, but I will just send you, I will send you $3 with your thing. And then, Amazon has a digital version, Kindle version.
Bonnie Meyer, we're out of time now. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. You can learn more about the No BS Spiritual Book Club at sedgbeer.com. And in the meantime, I'll be back next week with another edition of What Is Going On. Till then, it's goodbye from me.